Yeah. I'm right back at it with my brother Jay Dutch. Fresh new trash for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Derek, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act school. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time, and let's get right to it. What the fuck podcast, ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man old school with the what the fuck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to What the Buck. I am Old School, your host, as always. I'm coming to you live from lovely Valrico, Florida, here in Studio 76 with an early edition of the What the Buck broadcast, which eventually turns into a podcast after the fact. I'm not as sound savvy as my friend Brent from the Pewtercast, who does a great job with post-production. So what we do after this show is we just rip this thing out and we put it up on the podcast stream, and you guys are able to listen to it. So if you're listening live, thank you. I see we got people over on Facebook, which is fun. We got people over in Mixler as well. And for you podcast listeners, we appreciate you guys downloading the podcast and staying loyal podcast listeners here in our 12th year. We're going to kick off with some housekeeping here. I apologize for the early start. Real life has been interceding a lot lately. You guys may or may not know I have a job, and that job every once in a while triggers travel, and tonight I've got to go pick someone up from the airport. So I wanted to move it forward a half hour, and then my play on words. Maybe by moving forward a half hour, our defense will show up a half hour earlier. And to be honest, our offense can show up a half hour earlier. Both of them seem to be showing up late in these games. So I do appreciate you guys changing your schedule for those of you who have changed the schedule to come into the show this evening. I also want to thank Steps Towing, Pepin Distributing, Tito's Vodka, Don Q Rum, and of course our friends at Steakhouse Elite. For those of you who don't know, we are a 501c3 charity. Our What the Buck Really Matters organization has just crossed over $100,000 to One Voice Foundation, which is pediatric cancer research support advocacy as well. We generate somewhere in the order of $50,000 to $75,000 a year in charitable donations as a byproduct of what we call tailgating with a purpose. So when you come to our tailgates, which is the only Hall of Fame tailgate in Tampa Bay, you will be able to take part in that. And so the folks who've come to our tailgates thus far this year generated over $5,000 for One Voice in the first 2 weeks. And we generated over $2,000 last week for the Grammatica Family Foundation. When I say last week, I mean the last home game. This month, or this set of tailgates for Sunday and then the next one in November, are for Movember, which is a nationwide, actually a worldwide movement to try and raise awareness of prostate and testicular cancer research. There's a lot of focus on other cancers, but guys, listen, we die too. And this is one of those cancers that if you get diagnosed early, you have a real legitimate shot of beating it. So we grow goofy mustaches for the month of November, and we try and raise money to help that effort. And we've done a good job in the past. Our target this year is $7,500, with hopefully about $5,000 or so coming from the tailgate. So if you're coming to the tailgate, please remember that. That's where your proceeds are going to go. And we do appreciate you guys supporting us in what we do. Last little note on this is that this entire season is dedicated to our fallen crew member, Richard Zeller. We lost Richard this offseason. He was very much a part of our family, as is his family. So you'll see my man Stuck's banner at the tailgate, and we'll have our moment of silence, but we appreciate all of you who reached out about that. So, oh, I'm sorry, I had one more note. We were just recognized, What the Buck Really Matters, who's headed up by its founder, Cheryl Stewart, known as Spent, by the Be Kind campaign, 98.7 and Steps Towing and the Buccaneers. So What the Buck Really Matters will be featured on that. So if you guys keep your ears perked up for that, we're really excited that folks are noticing what we're doing. They see us everywhere. They saw our team out there at the Jameis Winston event. We're all over the place. So it's not just about football. Now, the rest of the show will be almost all about football. So don't worry about that. If you're sitting there going, what the hell is this guy babbling about? I've tuned in, and all he's done for the last 10 minutes is talk about sponsors and charity and all sorts of other stuff. I want to remind you that being a Bucks fan has been hard for a long time. So for all of you right now who are lamenting and taking to Twitter, raising hell and popping off with just some crazy shit. And we're going to talk a little bit about the crazy shit that's being popped off on Twitter, by the way. Realize that this didn't start the other day, right? This is a long, long time running. We have had bad football for a long time in Tampa. And so we have extended the experience from before the whistle to well after the whistle. And we've made some great friends along the way. And they've helped us gain some perspective. Because you need perspective to keep your sanity. And I know that the Buccaneer ecosystem has lost its sanity when I see what's happening on social media. Now, admittedly, social media is probably a really tough spot to try and gauge sanity from. But it started early this year. I want to admit, and this is the counseling part. Before my man Trevor calls in, Tampa Bay Trey, at about 8:50, I want to do a little bit of counseling. You're all free people. I'm a huge fan of freedom. I think it's a good idea. So you're free to think whatever you want. But realize that I am also free to call you a shithead if you're out here calling to bench Jameis, to trade Gerald McCoy, to fire Coach Cutter, to fire Coach Smith. If you're in the camp that's waving these flags, rest assured that it's not just me who thinks you're a moron. Now, you can be emotional and angry, and I get it, we stomp. And I've seen a lot of the boards and the Facebook posts say, hey, listen, you know, go 24 hours and don't post until, and you can do that, but I get it. You know, it's lamenting, it's cathartic, you want to get it out, you want to break stuff. I remember when I was the fan that wanted to kick shit when we lost. I do, it wasn't that long ago. But then I realized it really didn't just matter that much. And now Shuck is jumping in here early in the chat room. I didn't think it could get crazier than it was last week. But then I saw on Twitter, Simeon Rice talking about how he could come in here and take us to the playoffs. Now listen, I love Simeon Rice. Simeon Rice is a huge part of Buccaneer history, a tremendous athlete, and a better human being. I mean, just an articulate, bright, talented, artistic, next-gen kind of cat. Do not get it twisted. He is not a defensive end in the NFL anymore. For all of you who have posted anywhere, well, what could it hurt? It could hurt a lot. It could cost playing time for someone who can actually get the job done. It is embarrassing fundamentally. This man, the last time he tried to play in the UFL, couldn't score against second-tier players. Couldn't, when I say score, he couldn't get to the quarterback consistently. Now, that's not saying he's not one of the greatest defensive ends to play the game and he should be in the Hall of Fame, because that is an absolute certainty. I believe it with my heart of hearts. And any of these people who are saying he was only good because he played next to Warren Sapp don't understand the game. The man was a freak of nature. He changed the game. And like Mark is saying in the chat room over on Facebook right now, the people say he can't be any worse than what we have. Bullshit, he can't. Robert Ayers is right. Now, I'm going to use that as a transition, as if I'm some kind of a broadcaster, to players shut up. Now, we talked about this in the offseason. Rick, I'll get to your question. I won't miss it. It's a good one. Players coming out crying about playing time. TJ Ward. You don't know the system. You didn't get the system yet. Then you got injured. Then you came in and blew plays, and you're complaining about playing time. Shut up. Swaggy Baker. You couldn't practice consistently, which shouldn't have surprised anyone with you coming from Washington. Now, I'm okay with guys who take plays off in practice. I don't like guys who take plays off during the game. That's called a loaf. I'm not a fan. And I'm not actually accusing Swaggy of that. What I'm saying is we all know why he wasn't practicing as much as he should have at training camp, because he never does. And they knew that when they signed him. But you are a rotational player, and Coach Smith came out and said that. Know your role. You're a rotational player. When you're in there, give 100%, bust ass, get to the quarterback, stop the run, occupy two tackles or two guards, a guard in the center, whatever you got to do. But other than that, shut up. Rick, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm talking a lot for you to give quotes of individual segments. We should be progressing is the question. Yes, we should be progressing. But so what? What is your point? I love you, Rick, but what is your point? Yes, we should be progressing. Because we're not progressing, we should say stupid shit like sign Simeon Rice? Or fire the coach once again 2 years in? Is that your counter-argument? Is that the assertion? Because I'm not sure what you're getting at. So, moral of the story, what do I think about VH3 playing nickel? I think it's fine. I don't care where they play him. I think he's talented enough to play in the NFL, and I think the staff should play him where he's best deployed. I think he played well last week. I don't need him getting up and Mutomboing people when the pass is off target. I don't need any of that stuff. I know he's probably amped up, and I get that. But generally speaking, your job is to stop guys from catching the ball. So when you do your job, once again, shut up. But I get that I am in the minority. I get that I'm the guy who used to like Barry Sanders when he scored a touchdown, bringing the ball over to the referee. Like, the celebrations are fun, but I just don't need them. You know the greatest celebration is looking at the scoreboard when you win, something we haven't done recently. Now, we talked about it in the offseason, all of this pressure, and I'm not blaming Hard Knocks. Like, you guys know my position on Hard Knocks. I don't like Hard Knocks. I don't like the microscope it puts you under. I don't like the pressure that comes with it. I don't like any of the things about it, right? But when you have that much pressure, when a crack starts, it gets ugly fast. And I got to say, I got to give some credit to Coach Cutter and Coach Smith and Coach Monken. They've done a pretty good job in a really bad week of not letting this swell out of control because it was starting to go off the rails. Don't lose Sunday. Do not lose Sunday because it will get ugly as shit in town. So the question in the chat room about what's up with the pass rush, we'll talk about that a little bit. And then when we have Trevor on, we'll talk in depth about his Cover 3 article, which was fabulous as usual. My take on the pass rush is the Bucks made some calculated risks and they have not paid off. And that is the sort of constant refrain. The constant refrain. They bet on Jack Smith. They bet on Noah Spence. Injuries, etc. They bet on Will Golston. They haven't paid off. We don't have the ability to blitz because we had our top two linebackers out. And so there was no ability to be creative. Gerald McCoy can't do it by himself. The other guys haven't been playing particularly well. Rick, to your comment in the chat room, I'm not dismissing failure and I'm not being cavalier. What I'm saying is don't be fucking stupid. That's different. If you are seriously saying the idea is to sign Simeon Rice to fix this problem, you don't understand the game of football. It is that simple. It is unequivocal. That's not me being cavalier. I don't like losing. I just know that me losing doesn't affect my family or my children, my friends, the charity we do. My team can win or lose. I am not happy when we lose. I am much happier when we win. I hate it when I see great talent wasted. And we have a lot of talent on this team. It's so much more fun to talk football when you can talk trash. I remember the better part of 7 years where I could talk trash constantly when we were a really significant program. It's been a long damn time since that. But none of that leads me to make half-cocked, crazy ideas like this constant cycle of firing coaches and cockamamie ideas and schemes, right? Now, you guys who've been with me for a long time know one of the things that's the hardest thing about doing this podcast is it seems as though fans, even though they have just a copious amount of data out there, I'm not trying to blow smoke up Trevor's ass anymore, but his Cover 3 articles are phenomenal. He's not the only one putting great content out. There's tons of great content out there. You've got access to Game Pass. You've got access to analysis. Fans can become more educated now than ever. It is not close. Someone who never played the game, never coached the game, could sit there and consume this content just ad nauseum and learn the game. But instead, what people want to do is they want to talk about, oh, well, so-and-so is not a good leader because he doesn't smile, or look, he's not aggressive enough, and that's why I don't like him. The people who don't want Gerald McCoy on this team don't understand the game of football. It's that simple. He's a premier defensive tackle. Now, there is an argument that can be made that you want to go a Patriots direction and try and trade him when he has tremendous value and parlay that into a bunch of other players. That is an argument that you could make. But you cannot make, in my opinion, and I don't think it's really that much of an opinion because it's based on watching a ridiculous amount of film, you can't possibly think that Gerald McCoy is not a premier defensive tackle. Now, I can be mad that Coach Cutter or Coach Smith or anyone on the Bucs staff hasn't gone and beaten the living dog shit out of the officials, figuratively, not literally, of course, about what they're allowing to happen. He was held so much, it was ridiculous. Now, I get it. Holding penalties happen every game. I understand it. I do. Not egregious ones, not choke holds, not two hands inside the jersey at the point of the play. There is no excuse for what's being allowed to happen. And that's on the coaching staff, guys, at every level of every sport. You have got to stand up for your players. Now, they may be doing that. We may not get to see that, but it has not changed a single thing. So at some point, you have to just assume it's going to be allowed to happen. And if they're going to double him, and in some cases triple him, some of those other cats on that line better start doing their damn job. And that refrain is going to go through everything, and I know teams have taken it as their mantra. It's been around since the days of old, right? Do your job. If you do your job, you put the team in a position to potentially win. And interestingly enough, despite some sputtering and some play calling that I didn't quite understand, but I thought was better than it had been in the past, the offense put up enough points to win. If that offense can put up that many points, this team should win. Now, Rick has gotten to a point where I think he's got a question that I can have a conversation about. There is a problem somewhere. Agreed. Well, there are multiple problems everywhere, I would counter. It's not a problem. I think everyone wants to find that one throat to choke. Everyone thinks it's like, oh, yeah, look, this piece is out of position. Let me turn it 90 degrees clockwise like National Secret or whatever the hell that stupid Nick Cage movie was, Book of Secrets, and then everything will work. I think that we'll talk a little bit about the scheme, because I think that the scheme, and I think Trevor is onto something with his postulation. That may not be a word. I may have made that one up. His assertion, that is a word, and that's correct. National Treasure. Thank you, Ren. Bingo. Book of Secrets was the secondary title of the second one, right? But the goal of make them throw underneath, bend but don't break, all of these things, this concept that seems to be being thrown around. No, Trev hasn't been on yet. He'll be on in about 5 minutes, OP. And Derek, I'll get back to your comment about blitzing more. But that whole bend but don't break, make the play in front of you, get up there, rally, make the tackle, all of that can work. In fact, that was the hallmark of the days of the Tampa 2 prominence when Coach Dungy was here and Coach Kiffin. Keep everything in front of you, rally to the ball, make the tackle, try and get turnovers. The challenge is they're not doing that. I'm assuming Mitch in the chat room is just joking. So Phelps, let me know if you're just joking in the chat room so I won't tear you apart. So if you're going to play that bend but don't break, then you've got to rally up to the football and you've got to increase the number of turnovers. And that's another thing that a number of folks have mentioned, Trevor being one of them, and Joe Bucks fan mentioned in one of their articles. If you don't get those turnovers, you don't get the extra possessions. Now, if you notice, the red zone percentage for the Bills was not great. But we're not doing any of the pieces well. And that's a challenge. Oh, God, Mitch. All right. There's lots of guys in good shape at the gym. Go sign them. Put a helmet on them. Yeah, that's what makes a defensive end. Good Christ. If you're not going to bend but don't break, if you're going to be more aggressive, you've got to be able to. And this goes back to Derek Oversell podcast comment about blitz more. I honestly think that the injuries to your top two linebackers were devastating to Coach Smith. Now, that sucks. But when you look at two of your starting 11 going down and two of your premier, right, you could probably successfully argue two of your best three defensive players gone. You don't have a whole lot of flexibility. Ren brings up a great point in the chat room. It was easy to blame Vernon until he wasn't the problem, right? But he was never the only problem, and that's the point. It is a team game. It is rarely going to be the case that it is one person's problem, which brings up another issue that I had, which was everyone jumping on Adam Humphries. This has been a reliable, consistent, dependable producer. He fumbled the ball. It sucked. It hurt us badly and essentially cost us the game. But that's only if you look at the last play. You know what cost us the game? That field goal going through the uprights. That's what cost us the game. You could probably argue the five missed tackles on the play that got them closer to the field goal, because if it had been about 6 yards further out, it would have hit the field goal post and bounced off. No worries, Derek. So everyone out there saying, man, Humphries is terrible. Why would you throw it to him? Because he is a reliable and consistent producer. It just didn't work out, guys. It was an unfortunate turn of events, and it sucked for Bucks fans. We should never have been in that position. The offense took the lead. The defense should have been able to hold it. They weren't. Now, does that mean that I blame the defense entirely? No, I think this offense is capable of putting up more than the points they did in Buffalo. Hell, with the talent we have on this offense, you should score almost every time you have the ball. It should be the greatest show on whatever the hell we're playing on. And I think it's going to get there. I honestly do, if it can hold itself together. But that's going to be the real magic. That is going to be the real magic. Can it hold itself together? Now, the running game is going to have to develop. Coach did stay with it a little bit more last week than he had in the past. But again, this brought out the Doug haters again because his yards per carry were down, which made their argument look like it had some water, which it doesn't, in my opinion, based on the film that we've watched over the last couple of years. This is a situation where I do think that Coach Cutter is continuing to evolve. Coach Monken is continuing to evolve. They've got to get comfortable with play calling. I know that Chris from the Buckaholics did a good review where we talked about the now play, and I know that Trevor's about to call in. He's fine. He's in the chat room, man. He'll be fine. But that now play, if you go and you go to four wides or even five wides, good Lord, and you've got DeSean Jackson uncovered, that now play, getting the ball out to him, is just an automatic thing. We've got to get to the point where it isn't so scripted. They aren't trying to force. And again, like I mentioned, Trevor brought up a great point about the explosives. We're going to talk about it a lot when he calls in, both on defense and on offense. There's this focus, and it lends itself to Jameis's preference. Jameis likes to be a gunslinger. He likes to go downfield. He likes to get vertical. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, mind you, but you have to be smart about it. If the other team has game plan for it, and like we said, game planning for it, like the attempted throw to Cam Brate, where everybody knew that pass was coming, is just dumb. That's Trevor right there. Let's get him in here. Good evening. Is this Mr. Trevor Sikkema from PewReport.com?
It is. It is.
Wow. Welcome. I've been saying your name all damn night. I've seen you in the chat room, so you've probably heard many of these things already. Welcome to the show. How are you tonight, sir?
I am doing great. Dude, I got to say, you know, this is my first year doing the media side of things, but coming on this podcast is like an honor. Like, you guys have been doing this for so long, and I've listened to so many of your podcasts that this is cool. This is a really cool thing for me. So I appreciate you reaching out to me, giving me the chance to come on the show, because it's something that that I've been listening to for a long time. So like I said, it's an honor to be here, man.
Well, I really appreciate those kind words. I had said earlier, like, I don't pander often, but your Cover 3 series of articles have been tremendous. You and I spoke a bunch during training camp. I think you're bringing a level of depth to the game that I feel is necessary. I think it's probably underappreciated, but I hope you're able to keep getting people to read it, because it seems like they are, right? Which is sort of the magic.
No, I hope so too. Yeah, no, I just looking at things, and yeah, you and I talked about this in training camp. Man, I wish this was your full time job, because I miss you in that media room. I miss just getting to talk random stuff with you. But it's something that I kind of saw not a lot of beat reporters are doing, and there are other outlets and people who are covering different teams who are doing a lot more film based stuff. And I thought, hey, you know, this could be a niche that Bucks fans aren't really seeing a lot of. So that's what I'm trying to bring. You know, as somebody who never played the game of football, just loves learning about it, I'm trying my best to teach people about it.
Well, I think you're doing a good job, and that's part of the journalism side, is you're making it approachable, which is terrific. And I want to talk specifically about your Cover 3 article this week. But before we get into that, I mean, you and Pewter Report, obviously you're there, you know, at One Buck Place as often as anybody, probably more often than anyone but the janitorial staff. What's the injury situation? What are we looking at this weekend coming in? There's a lot of discussion about Brent Grimes. What's the feeling? What's the temperature in Baghdad?
Yeah, that was a good way to put it. Robert McClain, I don't know if he's going to play. When was it? It must be Wednesday. You know, he comes in the locker room. Maybe it's Monday. I actually think it was Monday. He comes walking in the locker room, and he's talking to Brent Grimes. And you're technically not allowed to talk to people who are in concussion protocol. So we can't talk to McClain at all. But, like, out loud, just talking to Brent Grimes, he's like, man, I'm not missing the game Sunday. But, like, didn't practice Wednesday, didn't practice Thursday. If he doesn't practice tomorrow, like, if he doesn't clear protocol tomorrow, it makes it very difficult for him to play. Brent Grimes, I have no idea, because and nobody has any idea, because when he missed that game against Minnesota with a shoulder injury, nobody actually thought he was going to miss the game. So now here he is listed on the injury report again with a shoulder, and it's kind of like a Russian roulette at this point. Jameis is going to play. Jameis is totally going to play. That's not... he didn't suffer any kind of setback or whatever. So like he's fine. But the corners, man, I really don't know.
Well, it's interesting. Now, when you say you can't speak to someone in the concussion protocol, so he is still in the protocol. He has not been released from the concussion protocol.
Not that we've been told. No, we weren't able to talk to him today or yesterday. So that tells us he's still in the protocol.
Gotcha. All right. Well, you're right. I mean, the Brent Grimes not play thing early was confusing as hell. So now we got to just hope he shows up. He didn't have his best game as a Buck last week, but he's still the best cornerback we have on the field. So
it's true. Yeah.
Behind him, it's going to be a bit of a Russian roulette. But now, beyond that, I do want to get your take as well, because you guys are on site. And while I was bitching earlier about players talking, because I am a grizzled old man, and I think players should shut up. Not that they are not allowed to have an opinion, just be quiet about it. What's going on at One Buck? What is the actual temperament there, right? Because sometimes it can be, and I know that TJ came out and said, man, I wish I had not done that. Swaggy, I don't think, has said anything to walk it back. I know there's frustration. They're human, too. They had the pressure. They want to win. They're getting questioned constantly, I'm sure. What's it like? You've been there. What's it like at One Buck Place? Is the temperament as fragile as it seems?
I mean, there's a lot of frustrations, but nobody likes losing. You know what I'm saying? So this is just the way that it is. You know, his team, like, you know, I was listening to you before I came on. You know, you're talking about Hard Knocks and having this hype and best Buccaneers team we've seen since the Super Bowl era and all of this stuff. And then when you start 2-4, nobody's happy. Nobody likes it. And when you throw in the mix that there's a bunch of free agent guys that have come in and either their first or second year, whatever it is, who came from programs where they have had success, it makes it easier to hear these kind of outbursts and complaints. And I'll say this, you know, when we asked Winston about it, we asked Winston about any kind of division in the locker room. Winston's like, look, man, you guys are all talking about that, but I don't see any of that. Like, the coaches do a fine job in practice. Nobody's complaining about anything. Like, we're still a team. We asked Justin Evans this on Wednesday too. We were like, hey, what about the division in the locker room? Like, can you speak to that at all? And he almost looked at the person who asked the question, just like, what are you talking about? Like, there's not like a division or anything. And then they brought up Ward's comments and Baker's comments. And Evans was just like, look, I'm in the locker room. I practice with these guys. I don't see any kind of division. So there might be harboring, you know, there might be a little harboring of some hard feelings, maybe some displeasures. Like, we even saw a little bit from when Gerald McCoy was answering questions yesterday.
Right.
We can see that guys are getting frustrated is the word. Anybody gets frustrated when you lose. And that's the thing. There's going to be questions to be had. But as you know, in terms of like a mutiny going on, like I've seen some people on Twitter talk about, it's, you know, it's not anywhere near that level.
Well, that's good to hear, because that means it hasn't bubbled to that level, at least at this point. We had a funny question from Ren. Can you ask Grimes to talk to McClain to find out whether or not he's going to play? I don't know if that gets you around the rules. If you haven't thought of that, there you go, and that's Ren Daxt.
Look, I almost, you know, because this is my first year doing this, and McClain, like I said earlier, he literally just said this out loud, and like pretty loud out loud, just when talking to Brent Grimes in the locker room. And so I kind of went up to Mark Cook afterwards, and I was like, hey man, I know we're not allowed to talk to Robert McClain, but like, he just said this out loud. Am I allowed to like write about this? And he's like you probably shouldn't. So sorry, Ren, I don't think I have the loophole for you.
Fair enough. Kamoto wants to know if you think there are gonna be any moves by the Buccaneers.
I mean, not the ones that the fans probably think. So like, I don't think they're trading for Cromartie. I know for a fact they're not interested in Byron Maxwell at all. They had no idea that DeMarcus Ware was even thinking about coming out of retirement a couple days ago, when that was all speculation. So right. I think that this team really is just what it is. They did enough work in the offseason to get enough new pieces in, to get enough different pieces in. And at this point, it is, hey, coaches, you have got to make the best out of this situation. I know the injuries suck. Obviously, the one to Noah Spence certainly is an edge presence. You think they're going to replace that, but Darryl Tapp is the guy that they chose. I really don't see a big splash coming via trade or anything like that.
All right, fair enough. Let's get into the cover three piece. You talk about explosives. You do a lot of good work about explosives, and you kind of draw some conclusions based on what you see them doing, and you talk specifically about the cover two shell that they tend to sit in. Try and tell folks a little bit, if you could, describe what it was that popped out that made you want to write that cover three, because I always think that's interesting. Something bubbled to the surface. You said, shit, this is what I've got to write about. And then take the next step and say, okay, if the team sees what you see, How do you see them addressing it?
Okay, so, I mean, we'll start it off with, I always try to let the film do the talking for me. You know, I can go into, not that I don't go into film sessions with thoughts in my mind about what I think I might see, but I always try to let the film ultimately determine what I'm going to write about. And so, really, this isn't something that just happened. It's something that I've been noticing for a little bit. And when you talked about a cover two shell there, what we're talking about is we're addressing that soft coverage, the thing that got a lot of people mad at Vernon Hargreaves for a while. And what it is when you play a cover two shell or quarters coverage, which is kind of like cover four, what you're doing is you're taking an outside safety, free safety, the strong safety, and the other outside safety, if you're looking at the field. And you're basically dividing it up into fours. They have those four zones there, and it's a zone coverage scheme. So the cornerbacks are playing the zones that are closest to the sideline. The safeties are playing the two split zones that are in the middle. The problem is that there's not a lot of help right now because of that. There's not a lot of definitive roles in the pre-snap in the secondary. So a lot of times, like, for example, when you see Vernon Hargreaves play so far off, and when we get into that limiting explosives, they're trying to limit other teams from getting huge plays. So if you think about it like that, and here's the statistics. This is what I found. The Buccaneers are number one in the NFL at limiting 50 yards or more passes. But then if you keep going down, like 20 yards, 10 yards, those shorter ones, they get progressively worse at it. So what does that tell you? They don't want to get beat over the top. That is almost their number one goal. And that's why when you see Vernon Hargreaves play 10, 15 yards off, or when you see that 25-yard comeback route be completed by John Brown, that's why. It's because he doesn't have help over the middle, because he doesn't know if either of those safeties are going to help him, because their job is like, oh, well, one of them takes the middle and then the other one will help you deep. But you don't know which one's going to help you deep. You don't know if the play is going to tell the safety closer to Brent Grimes they're going to help him, or if it's going to be Vernon. So all Vernon's thinking in his head is, I can't let anything over my head. And so it's just, I just feel like there's no help in the secondary there. And then, how you switch that up, how you get that a little bit better, you have to have definitive roles. Have a Justin Evans, a Chris Conley, I don't care, whatever. Have a free safety playing almost like a single high, where a cornerback at least has a thought that they're going to get help deep. And then in the run game on the flip side, they're getting gashed on the defensive line because the defensive line coaching is terrible, if you want to get into that next. But there's no safety help to get into the box. You just have these two safeties that are almost in no man's land at the middle of the field. And yes, they're playing like a tight end, like a post route or something from the slot. Yes, they're defending those, but they're hanging the corners outside to dry. And because of that, that goes down all the way into the linebacker group and into the run help group when we talk about run fits and all that. So it's kind of a lot there, but that is my theory.
That's a mouthful, theory, though, Trevor. And I want to go back, and I'm talking to Trevor Sikkema from PewterReport.com, at Tampa Bay Trey on Twitter for you guys who just joined. And it's not you're not related to Vi Sikkema, the former punt returner, as far as we know. Ren is in fuego in the chat room. He gave a summary of the podcast thus far, and it was essentially that I don't ever want to sign Simeon Rice and that Nick Cage was a national treasure. Well done, Ren. Let's get back to what Trevor was just talking about. Typically, your coverage call is going to let the corners, the safeties, and generally speaking, the linebackers, unless you're in a zone blitz and you're dropping a lineman back into a flat zone, typically. They're going to let you know if you're in man, what your responsibility is. If you're in zone, what your zone is, where your zone happens to be on the field. And so as a cornerback, you may take a 10-yard cushion, but your first step off of the snap is up because you are going to cover the short zone. And that someone, you don't really give a shit who it is, but you've got help somewhere behind you. So if you make the risk, if you want to try and cut off the out route or jump a slant or whatever, you have that latitude to do that because if they go with a double move and get around you, your buddy's got you back there. Now, what you're seeing is there's no confidence in the safeties actually doing that, but it's hard to tell, I would think, and let me know if this is wrong, it's really hard to infer or interpolate from what you see on the film what the play call was. You can make some guesses.
Yes.
But it's really hard to tell what the hell they're doing back there, right?
Right. I mean, ultimately, when we do these film reviews, and I think you talked about this either on last podcast or a previous one, you mentioned this thing where we can have a pretty good guess when we look at coaches' film of what's going on, but it ultimately is a guess. I don't know the call. I'm not hearing it from Mike Smith. I'm not sure. So I can see when things go a certain way, I can go, okay, well, this is what it looks like here. This is the kind of coverage that's going on. But for the last couple of games, this is what I've noticed. The Bucs secondary is so it's much more anticipation. Or no. It's more reaction-based than it is anticipation. And that, I think, is why it's failing, because they're leaving too much to be decided after the ball is snapped, and there is not enough confidence in what they're about to see before the snap. So that's kind of my gripe with it.
So that for those of you listening to the podcast, if that didn't hit you like a ton of bricks, I want to emphasize that. The defensive play call, because a lot of people are saying, well, what's the problem? What's going on with the defense? Is it the scheme? Which is a vague descriptor, but good enough to say what the play call is, what our scheme is, what is the soul of this defense. Is it the players, right, or the parts, or is it the execution? And it could be some of all three of those things. It could be a really shitty recipe that involves all three of those things not being good. If they're waiting until the snap to let players just read and react, that speaks directly to scheme, right? That means what they're saying is we hope our athletes just out-athlete the other guys and guess based on the film work. When I say guess, that's not a fair thing. They hope that they make a play based on their experience and education that allows them to break up the play. And that's not what coaching's about, right? You want to put your players in the right position to have a higher likelihood of doing those things. So you want to make sure that you, like we talk about all the time in red zone. In red zone, the reason we should score every time is because Mike Evans is a freak of nature, and if the cornerback plays head up, he's beat either way. If he plays inside shade, he's beat to the fade. If he plays outside shade, he's beat to the slant. It is not a question about whether we should score a touchdown. It's how many we should score. So how do you scheme against that? Well, you put the cornerback in outside shade, you force him to the slant, you roll a linebacker underneath the slant, and you get an interception a la Shelton Quarles, and you run 93 yards down the other end of the field. These are the things that you have to scheme. And we're not seeing that from this staff. And you said something that scares the living shit out of me. The defensive line play is simply because you don't feel we have very good defensive line coaching.
No,
tell me more.
No. This is kind of, you can, so I'll just say that for one, I don't think Chris Baker is the player that they thought they were going to sign. And I don't mean that as that Chris Baker is not talented. And I also don't mean that as like Chris Baker is lazy. That's not what I'm talking about. I am talking about the fact that when you look at Chris Baker, he's 6'2", 320 pounds. You look at his body shape, he came from a 3-4 defense in Washington. You think, this guy's a nose tackle. This guy's a run stopper. This guy can take up multiple blocks, hold the point of attack, whatever you want it to be. And Chris Baker's not that. And you could see it in the Bills game. I pointed out a little bit in my cover three. When you play nose tackle, you sign up for getting double teamed. That's just the way that it is. You know, the reason why guys like Dontari Poe, Vince Wilfork, you know, Starlo Tulele, whoever. The reason why you love these certain guys is because they can take on multiple blocks and they can just hold that point of attack and they can let the guys behind them do what they need to do. The Bucs have two phenomenal linebackers who could possibly do that. But instead, Baker's getting bullied and that's not letting McCoy do what he needs to do. The edge guys are now not doing what they need to do. And I'm not saying it's all on Chris Baker, because they're also getting to the D-line coaching thing. The stunts, the twists, the games, the whatever you want to call them, they got to stop. They have to stop. Or you're going to watch the Buccaneers finish with maybe lower sack numbers than they ever have, because this is just ridiculous. And even when you see some of these stunts and twists working, you watch a quarterback hike the ball, go into a three-step, five-step drop, whatever it is. He's sitting there bouncing around, and it is, to quote a famous defensive tackle, Warren Sapp, it is like ships flying in the night. They move right by the quarterback and it does not matter. We saw this so many times when the Patriots game with Tom Brady, there was so much chaos around him and Tom Brady knew, you're not even coming at me. You're just moving. You're moving for the sake of moving. And that to me is bad coaching. You've got to just get up the field, man. The games, the twists, the stunts, they got to stop, and they have not yet. And it worries me with this coaching staff, specifically with Jay Hayes and Mike Smith.
Now, what's interesting about that is this an indictment of stunts and twists in general, or is this an indictment of what you believe is the way the staff is having them execute these stunts and twists? Because this is not a new problem. I remember when Steve White used to come on the show years ago, this was a problem then too. A tech stunt is a fine thing to run, right? A tackle end twist is fine. But you have to understand how to run it. What you have to do is the tackle has to get upfield aggressively to draw the offensive tackle upfield, force the space, right? And then twist underneath the guard who's dragging, the defensive tackle. Your end drives upfield. Your defensive tackle comes in, and then you make the twist. It's like coming off a screen in basketball.
Yes.
But those angles are really important, and that's something I think that sometimes fans lose sight of is the art form that pass rush is and why we used to love having Rod Marinelli. He was a maestro of defensive line coaching because the minutiae matter. Where your hands are, when you fire your hands, how you make your move, the foot placement on your get off, these things all matter, especially on a twist, because like you're saying, you're taking your circuitous route to the quarterback if you're running a stunt. You're adding steps. So you better make them important. But it's interesting you call out Jay Hayes on this because this is less than ideal to hear in general. But let's switch off of the defense for a second and let's go over to the offense.
Sure.
Because explosives certainly have a role to play there, too. Your Cover 3 article from the week before, somewhat conveniently, talked about the focus of the offense. Now, Jameis had what, by all outward appearances, was a pretty damn good game, I thought, last week. He left a couple of interceptions on the field. Thankfully, one broken up by Mike Evans. Another one broken up by the defensive player being a defensive player and not knowing how to catch. But still, there are so many weapons here. What is your thought about what's holding this offense back?
Well, I'll just say that I thought they did a much better job this past Sunday at doing what they needed to do to set up the small things, as we talked about, to get to the bigger things. And that's what I think. That's what I think was the problem with the first couple of weeks is as we saw this team really want to get to those explosive plays. And like you said, those big plays, those highlight reel plays, why you bring guys in. And when Gruden was here, and I know this because Scott told me this, Scott Reynolds, who's my boss over at Pewter Report, he was telling me that when Gruden did the plays, he would have half of his play sheet was, I think, green is what he said. And then there was a square up at the top of these red plays, the plays that you wanted to get to. But if you didn't hit these certain green plays, you couldn't get to the red ones because you knew they wouldn't work.
Right.
It seemed as though in the first 6 weeks, Dirk Koetter just wanted to get to the red ones. He just wanted to get to these big plays because they have the talent to do it. And they absolutely do. But you have to, you know, set up the slant pass to set up a double move. You have to be able to establish a run game to give time for routes down the field and a play action. You have to make sure that when you're using both of your tight ends, you're both using them as complements, not just as run players. You know, it's just that kind of stuff. The little things that lead to the bigger things, and it will come. You just have to let a game plan be full, not incomplete, not fast forward to the good part. That doesn't exist in the game of football, at least not for this team yet. You know, with quarterbacks like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, sure, maybe you can get to some of those things pretty early on. But with this offense, as dynamic as it is, you know, with the young quarterback that they have, you gotta get to that part. You gotta build the story to get to the climax of the story that you're writing.
Look
as
at
an offense every game.
Whipping out a story arc. You gotta get the rising action to get to the
right. Come
to get
on,
to the conflict. Then you get your denouement, right?
Like, no, exactly. Then you get the ending to the romantic comedy everybody loves.
Alex, I'd like sports podcasts that use the word denouement for 500, please. None of them. All right, listen, we've got Trevor Sikkema of PewterReport.com. I've already taken way more of his time than I probably should have. I know you got stuff going on tonight, but tell people about all the things you got going on at PewterReport.com, where else they can hear you other than on this podcast, which we were fortunate enough to have you, and what else they should be paying attention to.
Yeah, man. You know, just anything over at PewterReport.com, really. If you guys aren't reading that, I encourage you to go over there every time you can. So Mark, and Scott, I think we do a pretty good job, if I do say so myself. I do a thing called Cover 3 that comes out every Tuesday, Wednesday, sometimes Thursday if I'm really late with it. That's just an X's and O's breakdown. I do these every single week, getting into what I think are the things that the Bucks kind of need to get better. But most of all, man, I'm on Twitter basically 24/7. Derek could probably attest to that I basically don't even pick my head up from my damn phone.
That is correct.
Most of the time. So follow me on there, man. I love interacting with people. I love just talking football. If you ever have any questions or things like that, even like any jokes, little things that you want to sit here and there, man, I'm having a blast doing this, getting to meet tons of Bucks fans, football fans, whatever it is. So if you follow me on there, I try to keep it light, try to keep it fun and informative as well. So,
well, if you happen to talk to Cook later, wish him a happy birthday from all of us over at What the Buck.
I will.
I did it offline, but a big happy birthday to Mark Cook. I know it's a big happy birthday to Daisy as well. We love what you do at Pewter Report, all you guys. Of course, we have our smart asses in the chat room who corrected your sequence to Mark, Scott, and I. Don't be sorry. Stop it. I've got a friend of mine who's a really good fan, loves it, and he gives you guys shit all the time for your grammar. For the amount of content you guys put out, I think people are lucky that it's even spelled properly most of the time. It's just crazy.
I type too fast, so I understand it. It's definitely something I have to get better with. So please bear with my terrible spelling. I went through most of my life thinking that journalism was stupid and that I would never have any involvement with it. So I'm paying for that now. So you can make all the jokes that you want, and I would just promise that I'll try to get better with every article.
He's hard not to like, with the exception of his man bun. Trevor Sikkema, at Tampa Bay Trey on Twitter. Thank you very much, my friend. Enjoy your evening, and I'm sure we'll have you back on if you're willing to come back on soon.
Hey, I enjoyed it, Derek. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care, brother. All right, Tampa Bay Trey. That was fun. I have not had him on the show yet. We had a great time at training camp this year talking about the Bucks and what was going on. And if you're not reading those Cover 3 articles, I'm not kidding. You really should. They are phenomenal. Let's turn our guns, as it were, to this week's game, because we are going to end promptly this evening at 9:30, because I do have to get to the airport. There's nothing magical here, guys. I know that folks want magic. They want the secret sauce that'll make this all better. I thought Trey did a great job of talking about what I think is a great characterization of the play calling problem, which is it is immature, right? It's excited. It's anxious. You do have to build a story. You do have to set up play action. You do have to, and you know, Ren in the chat room says, hey, watch the play action off the fake end around to Reedy, which I still don't know why they haven't run to Deshaun. But I was sad he wasn't in the studio. You couldn't see him being buntastic. Yeah, it's a pretty impressive man bun. There's no doubt about it. But you've got to do those things. Now, that comes back to fundamentals. Now, that's coaching fundamentals. That's play calling fundamentals. On the actual field, it all comes back to the things we talk about every week. And if you do those things, you have a better chance of winning. If you block better and you tackle better, you have a better chance of winning. If we tackled better last week as a defense, even as badly as the rest of it went, if all that was done was that tackling was better executed, the Bucks win that game. They just do. It's not that it was all Shady McCoy, right? I mean, it wasn't just that. It was tackling in general. Now, you got Levante David going in there and just Deboing bitches and taking the ball out of their hands, which is great. I'm sure Sim's going to keep tweeting. And listen, this isn't a personal attack of Simeon Rice. I love Simeon Rice. I love what he did for this team. I love what he did for the area. I love who he is as a person. I love what he's done since he left the league. And I do think he has been slighted for the Hall of Fame. But there's no way he's an improvement on the defensive line. It's just not. It's impossible, as they say in Mulberry. So it all comes back to the basics. Right, we look at the keys of the game. We'll do. Let's get your swords and skulls in here from last week. I'm going to be interested to see what those are. The skull, for those of you who don't remember, is the bonehead of the play of the game. The sword is the good one. And also think about your predictive MVPs for this week on offense and defense. When we look at the Carolina Panthers, this is a team who's struggling. They just got beat by the Chicago Bears, who after we beat them, everyone said no one could beat. No wonder we beat them. They're terrible. I'm sure all that's changed because Trubisky's the quarterback. That's the only difference that's happened there. It could just be that we don't realize that teams are all kind of pretty good in this league, and the Bears didn't suck quite as bad as you thought, and we're not quite as good. Impossible is a Polk County word. You like that one, Pinnacle? You can't do the whole defense, Derek. You know that, Oversell Podcast. Come on, brother. One person. The only way you can cheat on that is if you pick a coach. I guess you could pick the owners. That's kind of a cheat, too. He goes in the Hall of Fame as a Buck. Ren. Rice, when he goes in, even though it'll be late, he will go in as a Buck. What the hell is that talking about? Oh, Cam Newton. You know, Olsen goes down, then they throw to no-name tight end for 16,000 yards. They still got weapons up there. Cam Newton's got a lot of pride. He's getting feisty in press conferences. Their defense is taking a huge hit with Kuechly going out again with another concussion. God knows, I hope that guy doesn't end up doing permanent damage to himself. But this is a team who's on the brink. We were in a must-win game last week, right? I actually said must-win game. Guess what? We lost. What does that mean? It means that this week's a must-win game too. There's a lot riding on this week for both teams. At home, the Bucks have played better. It's true. They're wearing white uniforms, though, and I hear from the fan base that means we're doomed. Could you hear the sarcasm? Did I put it on heavy enough? I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it was pretty serious. So Skulls and Sword, Nick says, Skull to Simeon Rice for not being on the field last week. Skull to Mike Smith, which I expected. Racist. The white uniforms. Nice, Pinnacle. Sword to Jameis. I agree. I think that Sword was definitely Jameis. I think he's going to be again this week. I think he's going to be the predictive MVP. A Sword to Quan. Pewtercast gives a Sword to Quan. That's interesting. Brent, I would love to get into more of that. I wish I had more time in tonight's show because I thought Quan played pretty poorly. He made some tackles, but I thought he played like a guy who'd been out. His depth on drops, the linebacking depth on drops is just bad, and it didn't get a whole lot better when our starters came back, and that's a problem. I gave the skull to Humphreys, even though I think that the hate to Humphreys was ridiculous. It was a horrible time for it to happen. I know it was one of those things. There are other people that could have gotten a skull for sure. Certainly could have gone to... And look at the Pewtercast. I like the dichotomy there. You got one side of the Pewtercast giving the sword to Quan, and another side giving the skull to Quan. That's nice. I'm going to go back and listen to your Pewtercast, your most recent Pewtercast. Cornhole with Chris Fisher, I don't disagree. Well, Hump didn't get a whole lot of targets in the game, did he? I mean, that's the thing. Hump's targets have gone down as OJ's have gone up, and that's to be expected. He had three targets, made two catches, 13 yards, 6.5 yards per 8 yards, and then the one fumble, you know? So he did what he was told to do. Oh, you're talking predictive. Okay, yeah, so let's do that since we're coming up on time. We're at 9:20. We'll have 10 minutes left. Predictive MVPs for this week as we play the Carolina Panthers, who are very much in a make-or-break moment, just like we are. I mean, you go into this game, you got to get a win. It's a division game. That's the thing. People are saying the season's over. It's not over. It's just a whole hell of a lot harder. So predictive MVPs on offense and defense. I am going to go with Jameis on offense. On defense, I really want to pick Gerald McCoy, but the way they're letting people hold this guy, I don't know what the hell he can do. I mean, it is absolutely insane. I think that it's more likely to be a linebacker this week simply because of the way Cam Newton plays the game. I think if it's going to be a linebacker, it's probably going to be Lavonte David. That will be my selection. I definitely can see the argument. Aguayo, you're terrible. I can see the argument for Quan. As well. MVP Ayers. I like Pinnacle coming. Listen, I love Robert Ayers. I love Clint McDonald. I love Will Golston. But they've got to get to the goddamn quarterback. They've got to make tackles. They've got to be disruptive. They've got to do the things they were brought in here to do, and they're not doing them. And with McCoy getting doubled constantly, there's no excuse for it. It's absolutely crazy. I just don't understand. Evans and Quan, strong play by Art. Buckaholics in the house. Deshaun by Rendax. And listen, Deshaun's running good routes. He's out there moving around. When he catches the ball, he's running without it, or he's running after the catch. I love what Deshaun is doing on the field. I have no issue with it. What I have an issue with is we still don't seem to know what to do with all these weapons. Like we talked about it before. It's like you walked into this incredible wood shop with all of these tools, these lathes and miter saws and all this stuff, and you don't know what the hell you're doing. You've never had any training. Jameis has got more weapons than he knows what to do with. So help him out, coach. Let him know what you're going after. Right? Scheme, execute, adjust, and go. Let the kid throw the ball. There was a great video review on NFL Network that I watched before this where they were talking about how Jameis wants to go down the field, right? And he's got to be able to take the checkdowns, and he does. And on the play where he's intercepted, where he's trying to go to Cam Brate, and he got intercepted. First of all, the ball was behind Cam Brate, which is a tendency of Jameis to throw the ball a little bit behind. Because he still could have completed. And they showed a clip from the Minnesota game where it was the final interception we threw to Mike in quadruple coverage, which, by the way, the ball was on target. And I'm not saying Mike should have caught the ball because he got just destroyed by the three guys that were closest to him. But it wasn't an errant throw. It was just a dumb throw. It was accurate. It was just dumb. And that's different. He had Hump on that play cutting in open, but Hump fell down. Now, he didn't look and see that and then throw to Cam, so I can't give him credit for that. He had already decided he wanted to go to Cam anyway. He had the back underneath at 6 yards depth. He only needed 9 for the first down, I believe. It would have been an easy first down. He's got to be able to know what the plan is. and then go execute the plan. And like I said, Chris pulled out a great video of another now opportunity with DeSean Jackson. Any single time, and we do a lot of motion pre-snap, which is fine. We're not quite Gruden-esque when it comes to motion pre-snap. But if you're going to motion and free someone up, take advantage of it, guys. You have to. The other teams are. When they look up and see Vernon or anyone, Brent, 12 yards off the ball, they're going at that. They're taking it. So score predictions, drop them in there. I do think this is one of those things where the Bucs are going to rebound and maybe get some people back. It'll be exciting to see that. I'd love to say that the offense is going to blow up, and so I'm going to say that. I'm going to say it is a 32-17 Buccaneers win. I do think one of those scores will be a defensive score, and I do hope that Aguayo gets a chance to kick, and I do hope that he misses every single kick. Not because I hate Aguayo. I don't. He seems like a good enough kid. I just don't want to hear about it. I'm just sick and fucking tired of hearing about kicking and Aguayo and wham, 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 woe is me. I love Pat Murray. I'm a Pat Murray guy. I'm thinking about getting a Pat Murray tattoo. I'm glad that he's done what he's supposed to do, and I hope he continues to do it, and we can stop talking about kicking as a topic because it's just not that interesting. So 24-17 says K-Moto Bucks. 29-20 says Pinnacle Bucks. 38-24 from Pewter Crew. Ren Daxt gives me symbols that are 25-17 Bucks because he was holding shift down for Bucks to be all caps, I think, unless he was being funny. Either way, I figured out how many sacks. It's interesting, Opie. I looked on the scoreboard, and there's no place for sacks, so I don't really care. As long as we win, I don't really care. I mean, I do think it's important to get sacked or pressure at least to trigger it. 30-29 Bucks with 10 Pat Murray field goals, says Chris Fisher. Well done. Bucks 28, Panthers 14 from Derek from Oversell Podcast. Petercast, Brent says 33-24. So I think Bucks fans seem very, at least the Bucks fans here, seem relatively bullish about the opportunity. But listen, it's going to be interesting in the stadium. I know a lot of you guys come to our tailgate. You go to the game. If you don't come to our tailgate, and I don't hold that against you. A lot of people have their own tailgate, their own thing that they do. We think we do something a little special. We'd love to have you out there. But regardless, what can't happen is the fan base growth that was started in the offseason. You can't let adversity kill it. I mean, you can, but it's just chicken shit to do it. Right? It's easy to support someone winning all the games. In my opinion, and this is only my opinion, the test of a fan is when they support when things aren't good. That's why we wear our 12 years proudly. That's why our WTBX shirts are worn proudly to this day. Pinnacle, that's good. I'll get to see you out there. That'll be fun. But you have to be there. I don't care if we had 70,000 or 30,000 in the stands. If the people who are in the stands are making noise and supporting the team, then I'm happy as a Bucks fan. And I'll be happy beforehand to have drinks with you guys, raise money for Movember, you know, have the great food that our team puts together. We're collecting toiletries for the spring as well at this tailgate. So if you bring toiletries, we'll give those over to the spring, which is a house for domestic violence victims here in Tampa Bay. I agree, Nick. I think, listen, we say it all the time. We're undefeated at the tailgate. We may be mad after the game because we lost or upset or dejected or whatever, but we're always happy out there talking about what could be with our friends and with people who become family. So we'll be out there. 9 o'clock it opens. All the information's on the website at whatthebuck.net/tailgate. I will see you in New Orleans Oversell Podcast. I will be out there for those of you who travel to New Orleans. I'm at the Astor Crown Plaza. We're going to be doing a bunch of stuff on Bourbon Street that whole time. Hit us up on Twitter. We'll definitely connect a bunch of the What the Buck crews coming out there. It's going to be a great time. And listen, the New Orleans Saints are playing great football. I had said before, even before the Buffalo game, that I thought it would take till New Orleans. It would take till New Orleans for the offense to fire on all cylinders. And I think that New Orleans will be the coming out party. And I hope I'm right. Because there's few things better in football for a Bucs fan than to celebrate in New Orleans a win over New Orleans. Nick, you're right. Pro tip, don't get there late or around the time for the walk and try to drive down Ohio. They shut down Ohio Street. It's all that stuff's on the website, too. If you go to the tailgate, it tells you about the food. It tells you about the donations. It tells you about parking. It tells you drive by or turn by turn drive information. Get there early if you want to have fun. Kurt, we are just finishing up. We're 3 minutes out. I will have the podcast up in about 10 minutes. I apologize. We had to go early tonight. I have to pick someone up from the airport. But I think it was a good show. I appreciate everyone who tuned in. I appreciate Tampa Bay Trey, Trevor Sycama, for coming on. I appreciate our sponsors, Steps Towing, Pepin Distributing, Don Q Rum, Tito's Vodka, and, of course, Steakhouse Elite. And I appreciate every one of you guys, for supporting us for as long as you have. In closing, please, before you say some half-cock stupid shit like Simeon Rice should be a defensive end for the Buccaneers, go watch him play, what was it, for the Colonials in the UFL? I don't know. Go check that out. For everyone who says, oh, he looks like he's in good shape, go to a gym. There's 10 guys in better shape. That doesn't make you a football player. I love Sim. This is just fucking crazy. It's just crazy. But irrespective, go Bucks. Kurt McDonald predicts a 9-6 victory kicker duel with Pat Murray beating Roberto Aguayo 9-6. I like it. So, all right, man. Here we go. Bring back the whole Super Bowl team. So, I mean, we were Fisher and I, Bucks Brief podcast of yore, and I were joking around about it. Well, I mean, why are we going after Rondé? We need cornerback help, right? I mean, he's got a cushy job, but he looks like he's in good shape, right? I mean, just bring him down. No problem. Just step right in and play. Sapp looks like he's in good shape. Why don't we bring Sapp in? I don't know, man. I can't make people not be dumb, I guess. So, and Brent, listen, I love you, but I think you're absolutely crazy. Bring him in and let him get creamed. What does that do other than embarrass a legend? That does nothing. There's no valid reason to do this. No, and Sapp was never in good shape. He played better the fatter he was, by the way. He was just a freak of nature. put him at safety and fight Ward for playing time. All right, you guys are crazy. I'm out of here, Brent. I'm sure we'll continue this conversation on Twitter. I think that Simeon Rice thing is absolute craziness. I do think that the front office should do something like, hey, we appreciate it. You're a legend, but we're moving forward or something like that. I think you should always own your message. Don't let the message own you, and that's exactly what's happened. Sim is better at messaging than the Bucks are. Until next time, this is Old School for our entire crew at the What the Buck crew, for our entire family, the extended family, for What the Buck Really Matters, our foundation, who I'm so proud of for being recognized in the Be Kind campaign, Cheryl Stewart, our founder and executive director, and all of the folks who volunteer who make that possible. We thank you guys, and we will absolutely see you guys at the game. And Brent, I'm glad you really think that. I just think it's fucking crazy. So we're out of here. Go Bucks.
Yeah. Well, like Bugs Bunny, man, that's all, folks. My man Oaks, man, just shut down another show. Same day, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what? Next week, we gon' be right here talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, don't need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. 11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man Derek, they call him Old School. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.